Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 1st, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Scott's at the 101 this week, having some fun, it sounds like.
Always like coming out of the 101 out here in the Petaluma, California, just north of San Francisco. Love this town. I got to leave today, too. I got some other stuff I got to do. But this Ante Up Poker Tour series is going to go on throughout the weekend, so... If you're listening in close to San Francisco, come on out. I know the show is technically May 1st, but I know Chris will post it today, which is Thursday.
Right.
So event 4 is going to go on tonight, and then 3 flights of the main event, 2 on Friday, 1 on – or no, 1 on Friday and 2 on Saturday. And it'll wrap up on Sunday. So if you're around, come out and check it out and get all the details at anteuppokertour.com. But we've had a good time out here. They beat the guarantee by a lot on every event so far. And I've had some fun playing. And, of course, when I have fun playing, you can rest assured that I'm going to do some stupid stuff, right?
And stuff that's going to cheer me up today.
So last night, event 3, it's a half no-limit hold'em, half pot limit Omaha. Pretty cool. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And they allow all the other tournaments up until this one, they've allowed re-entry through the first 6 levels, which is when they take the break. For some reason, last night, they only took re-entry through the first 5 levels when they took a break, right?
Right.
So come back from break, very first hand, blind versus blind. I have ace-king. I get it all in with a guy with 10-8. Flops 10-8. Ace.
Whoa.
Brick. Ugh. Out. On the first hand, after re-entry closes.
So you can't get back in.
Couldn't get back in, couldn't find a cash game, so I just won drinking. So
that's still good news for you.
It is, actually, because I had a big tall boy Rainier up here, which I don't get back in Florida, so I was very excited about that. And, most importantly, 2 years running now, I've set the high score in the Ms. Pac-Man machine at Gale Central Club here in Petaluma.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty impressive, right?
That sounds funny, too, because I think, since we're saying it's Thursday, last night was Modern Family. I watched that show when I got home late last night, and Phil buys himself a Ms. Pac-Man machine.
Oh, love that show. Can't wait to see that episode.
And they live in California, so maybe you played Phil's machine last night. Very interesting.
So yeah, the total sucks when you get knocked out and can't re-enter at that point. On the first hand, too. I mean, I didn't even get a sweat. You
know, yeah.
But funnier yet was the second tournament, event 2. It's funny, in event 1, I was sitting next to another player who was new to the 101 as well, too. He drove in from, actually, I think he says he plays in Vegas mostly, but his girlfriend lives in San Jose, so they came up for the event. He ended up going on to win it, which was great. Wow. And so we're sitting there talking, and... For whatever reason, the 101, their tournament chips, the 25-unit ones are black.
Hmm.
They call them gray. I'm going to say they're black.
Okay.
And I'm just so used to black chips being 100-unit chips, right?
Right.
So so this guy struggled a little bit in the first event. We kept laughing at each other. In event 2, like first or second hand... I fire out what I think is a $300 bet on the river, and my remaining opponent looks and looks and folds, and as he folds, he's like, dude, that wasn't even a legal bet.
You put 75 out there.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's a... Oh, my gosh. Oh, man, so the table loved it. So the rest of the night, I was talking about how I put out a super strong 75-unit bet to take down a pot earlier in the night.
He knew you were just begging for a call, so he knew you had the nuts.
A little post-oak bluff there. Just enticing him to call so much that he has to fold. He has to be strong. He's only betting 75. Love it, though. And then event two, my favorite event of the week, not only because I finished fifth and cashed and got almost a dozen bounties as well, too. So
wow.
Did pretty nice in that event. But it was a progressive bounty tournament, Chris.
And, that's how you got almost a dozen of them, right?
No, actually. Well, a little bit. But okay. This is really exciting. I didn't really understand what this was when it was on the schedule. And quite honestly, I didn't really understand it until about three levels into it either. But here's how this works. You know, a normal bounty tournament, you knock somebody out, you get $20, $25, $50, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they just pay the cash, right? Here, when you sit down, every player is given two bounty chips. So when you knock somebody out, you're immediately paid $20 for knocking them out. And you keep one of the bounty chips. So they take one of the bounty chips and you keep one of them, right?
Yep.
So now you have three. So now if you knock somebody out that has more than that, you get $20 right away, plus $20 for any bounty chip that they have as well.
Wow.
So if they have four bounty chips, you're going to get $60 for knocking them out of the tournament. Plus, you keep all those bounty chips too. And now if somebody knocks you out, they're going to get $20 for all the people you knocked out, plus all the bounty chips you collected from those people.
Wow.
Follow along?
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of money.
It is. So
by the end.
Yeah, I had 10 bounties at the end, so that's $200. It's a $160 buy-in tournament, so I was already free-rolling by the time I got to the final table, just on bounties. And then, you know, I got like $385 or something like that. So I end up, cashing for almost $600 in a $160 tournament.
Holy cow.
And it made for interesting strategy, too, I think. One, at the final table, it was interesting. There were two players there who hadn't taken out anyone, which I think is really impressive to get all the way there and not take anybody out, right?
Yeah.
So they only had the two bounty chips they started with. So when you knock them out, at that point, now they're only worth $20.
Right.
So there was the hand that I went out on, actually, a player raised. I called, undercalled, all in. And then the big blind was the second chip leader there. He didn't care about what his cards were or what he thought my cards were or anybody's cards were. His question to me was, how many bounty chips do you have?
Yeah.
I looked at him, and he thought long and hard, because if he knocked me out right there, that's $200 that he got.
Yeah.
Almost. Well, 180, right, because I had 10. That's $180 just for knocking a player out of the tournament. Plus, you know, we're in the money at that point, so you're moving up money spots. But that's a lot of strategy to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely comes into, like, ROI kind of thing. Because when you're playing in a poker tournament, yeah, you knock somebody out, you're going up the pay scale if you're already in the money. But this changes everything, because you can get your buy-in back for right. Just knocking you out. That's huge, because now you're really just talking about tournament chips, but you're making actual value for them. Actual value, not expected value or whatever. I mean, that's pretty crazy. That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, and then this scenario happened at our table, so I didn't exactly see it, but I talked to the woman the next day. There was a massive chip leader. For most of this tournament, I was pretty close to the chip leader over the chip leader. At the other table, this woman went on a heater, and he looked over, and she just had chips coming out of her ears, right?
Yeah.
And like five hands later, she was out. And we're like, whoa! And so the woman took her out, got $160 in bounties just for taking her out, and she didn't go on to cash, but, you know, she ended up, you know, covering her buy-in
yeah.
just for taking the one woman out. And, you know, if you – just like a normal bounty tournament, if someone knocks you down to one chip left, they don't get any bounties from you. It's the next person that comes and gets the seconds.
It used to be a thing. A lot of the bounty tournaments are when you make it to the final table, you keep your bounty. I wonder –
Yeah, so, and that's the other part that I thought was interesting about this, is that it became part of the CHOP discussions after, of course, I got knocked out.
Nice, of course.
And what happened is I believe they ended up deciding to play it out, the final three players, but they stopped the clock and decided to keep their own bounties.
Yeah.
So they all blocked in that money, and then they decided to play it out rather than split the prize pool like you normally did. So at the beginning of the tournament director told me that that's usually what happens, is there's the bounty chips come into play in those CHOP discussions at the end.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Tournament.
Yeah, never actually experienced that before. I think I remember reading about it or hearing it somebody talking about one of these once, but I never actually got the full details. That is pretty interesting. It does change your frame of mind when you're playing. You know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if you guys are live near 101 or come out this way, it's on their weekly schedule, this tournament. So I think it's every Tuesday night, but you can check at the101casino.com. And come out and play it every week. It's really kind of cool. I'm going to find a way to work this into our crew somehow, I think.
Wow. So let me ask you this. Now, because of the progressiveness of it, does the overall prize pool suffer? Because that's a lot of money to have to give
well,
out.
Yeah,
you have to figure it out, too.
Yeah, $160 tournament, and I don't know what the entry fee and came out of it, but then obviously you're taking $40 out of that, out of whatever's left for the bounties as well too. But it was still, the prize pool was still pretty decent. I think first place ended up with $1,400, and then in a 49-player tournament.
Because I guess what's confusing me about it is, okay, so you have two bounties in your hand when you start. You have the one chip that's the regular, you pay it out right away. Then you have the one that is the progressive one. Is that correct?
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
So if somebody knocks you out, they get the $20 automatically from that first chip.
Right.
And then the second chip, they're holding on to it, but are they guaranteed that money in their pocket?
No, that chip goes to whoever knocks them out.
So in other words, you don't get that money unless you win the tournament?
Win or you do some kind of chop deal. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So when you had 10 bounties, then that means you didn't actually get that money.
Well, I've gotten
$20
from each of those 10 already.
That's right. So you got that regular money, but then the one that you're progressing. Okay, so they definitely can put a finite amount on how much the bounties cost.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Exactly. It all comes out of the prize pool.
Right. Okay. I got you now. Okay. Very good. That's pretty cool.
Very interesting. All right. So a little drama, and I kind of want to talk about this because this is the kind of thing that gives me the red ass. Is that poker players that make too much out of stuff and just can't move on. You know, here's the thing is, when we play poker, I'll admit I'm a little different than other folks. I play for fun, right?
Yep.
Obviously, I want to win money. I want to hit these bounties and stuff like that. But I'm out of the poker room to enjoy myself. And we had an unfortunate situation in this, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on it. We had a situation where a player, two players got it all in on the flop. They both turned over 8-6 offsuit. And when the turn came out, neither player could win. So it was going to be a chop pot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Forget what the cards were, but it was going to be a chop pot, right? So when everybody says it, of course, you know, because everybody's watching. And the dealer puts the stub down and starts to chop the pot, ascendant, without putting the river out. All right, pretty big problem,
yeah.
Generally speaking. Obviously didn't affect the hand at all, right? But two players who weren't in the hand made a big deal about this and wanted the floor to come over. The floor came over and then they explained it to him and the floor said, okay, well, it didn't affect the hand. Let's just move on. And one of them lost his mind because he wanted the tournament director to tell the dealer that he has to deal 5 cards. Now, all that is correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this went on for another hour with a lot of F-bombs and threats of lawsuits and, you know, it's a $160 tournament. And I guess, and I talked to some players the next day after this, and I was like, there's a line, I think, that I see players cross in these situations in a lot of times where they're correct in bringing up an issue, and they're even correct in probably getting angry about an issue. But then you have to stop and think, what am I trying to accomplish? And in this scenario, it was late at night. The ranking management of the room was there. You know, there wasn't anybody higher to go to than the tournament director. So nothing was going to change in the scenario. But this player continued to ruin the tournament for the rest of us by yelling and screaming for an hour over a hand that had no bearing on the tournament. And I guess I'm just curious for the nation if they want to get back to me on why this is accepted behavior, or why people think that this is a way to go about making poker better.
Jeez. I really don't understand that, because obviously it didn't affect him. He wasn't wronged in any way. This was just a matter of a rule, not some sort of, you know what I mean? It wasn't even unethical or anything. It was just a dealer made a mistake. It's no different than any other mistake
Right.
And if anything, I mean, it had nothing, no bearing on the tournament, and it had no bearing on that player who was arguing it. See, at that point, I don't know, as like a tournament director, I would pull that guy aside away from it. You know, because I think it might be Sam or one of the other guys, maybe even Jody, who used to tell us that you take the person aside away from the situation so that it can't escalate, because right. then all of a sudden people join in, and then you're aggravating all those people, and then they're, you know, this, you just isolate the problem. You say, look, I understand, and then however they handled it, I don't know how they handled it, but that to me is the way I would have handled it. But do I think this person was wrong doing this? Yes. I mean, sure, okay, all right, so you're smart. We get it. You know the rule. The dealer made a mistake. But in the grand scheme of things, no money's coming out of your pocket. And this was like a totally benign thing. It didn't even involve the wrong people getting chips, or it was a split pot. I mean, so, okay, so if the river had been the same eight that the other guy had in his hand, it would have been a fouled hand, and they realized
right,
or something,
exactly.
something like that. But come on. I mean, there comes a time when you have to realize you're making a big deal out of something for no reason. Lawsuits, that's hilarious.
Yeah. But he was hilarious. Very proud of the fact that he's won one of these lawsuits before.
whatever.
And he wanted everybody's badge number and everything because he has a really good attorney. And I didn't want to get involved. Again, this is one of those situations where I can't feel like I can speak my mind at these tournaments. So I just sat there quietly. Fortunately, another player was saying the things that I wanted to say to him at
yeah.
the table.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned pulling him away from the table to keep the tournament or the situation from escalating. The next day when I was telling people, and I'm like, you know, had there been video and audio on this whole situation, this would be a perfect training video for FBI hostage negotiators. Because there were like three trigger points here where if the ball bounced the other way, this would have turned into nothing. But it wasn't. You know, the dealer did one thing that he shouldn't have. The floor probably could have handled it a different way and could have ended it. And then, of course, the player could have ended it at any point. But it just kept escalating. It became this huge thing out of nothing, right?
Man.
And twice, both the tournament director and the cash game floor tried to talk to the player about this. And he got even more upset that they were interrupting him during his tournament.
Yeah.
So they couldn't even take him away from the table. You know, unless he said, you know, if you're going to talk to me, you need to stop the clock, and then, you know, whatever. But it was just unfortunate that, you know, and then, you know, so I talked to a couple of players. You know, we were all having a good time. You know, we're all in the money at that point. It was final table, and the last hour of the tournament that I was there and was just like dead silent.
Ugh.
And, you know, so this player took a situation that was incorrect, rightfully identified it and asked it to be rectified and said that it was ruining the tournament and didn't realize that his response that went on for an hour is really what ruined the tournament for everyone there.
Yeah, Ernie. Yep. Yeah, that's just
frustrating.
Yeah, that's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
All right, but anyhow, everything else is going really good out here, so folks, come out here and enjoy the 101. Just keep your panties out of a bunch when honest mistakes happen. And have a good time. But again, go to antiupokertour.com and get all the information on this event. And hopefully we'll be out here again next year, or maybe even again later this year. We'll see.
Cool.
But real quick, before I got out here, I was out at the two-pair poker tour at Thunder Valley, which is our great partner that hosts our world championship coming up this August and another event in November. And, you know, I mentioned last week I was in time for the Heads Up tournament and had a great draw party with Lon McCarron and everything. It was a lot of fun. And so I played it that day, and at night was the open-faced Chinese pineapple tournament. So there's two tournaments that I really like playing, Heads Up and Chinese.
Right.
And the concern, right, is that, you know, if you do really well in the Heads Up, you're not going to be able to play the Chinese, right?
Right.
So the frame of mind that I was in, I kind of like this frame of mind. It's I can go in and be not as hesitant as I might normally be in a tournament. Because
gotcha.
I know that if I get knocked out, then I got this other tournament that I want to play that I can play anyhow, right?
Right.
So you still want to do really well in the heads-up event, but if you get knocked out, you'll be fine because you go play the Chinese. So it's not like, you know, you're in town for one tournament and now you're stressed out about winning that one, right?
Right.
I thought this was a good frame of mind to be in, but I think what I found myself is that I played too fast in this heads-up event because I had that save. And then I got knocked out like I don't know, an hour into this heads-up tournament, which had a great structure. I mean, this thing actually ended up being a two-day event. They brought back the Final Four the second day because it was so late. And I could have been a lot more patient and still got knocked out in time to play the Chinese, but I let the fact that I could play this other tournament make me play this one suboptimally.
Man. So you have to plan your schedule accordingly, is what you're saying.
Because you
really put these kind of close to each other. Not you, them, but you decide to play both of these things, and you should have thought ahead, maybe, thinking, hey.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's the point I'm bringing up, is I thought ahead. I thought that this was a good thing, that there was this tournament that I could play, and if I got knocked out, and it was going to free me to play the way I need to play more aggressively in the first one, and it ended up being the opposite.
I have a plan, and it ends up being the opposite.
It ends up being a really shitty plan.
I really don't know why this failed. I planned to do this, and it didn't go this way. In fact, it went the exact opposite way.
Oh, man. All right, well, moving on. Real quickly, we added this to the show last night because this is just crazy, the stuff that's going on in Baltimore right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I'm actually getting on a plane to Baltimore tonight.
Oh, man.
Fortunately, once I get there, I'll land and get out of town, so I don't have to worry about it. But it's really sad what's going on there, and these riots not only affected baseball, which was hilarious. I don't know if you guys saw this, that the Orioles played this game with no fans.
Yeah, in front of nobody.
They still did the national anthem and everything, which I thought was pretty cool. But it also forced the citywide curfew now from, I think it's like 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. So it's forced the Horseshoe Baltimore there, where our good friend Anthony Chester is a manager. They have to close an hour earlier so people can get home before the curfew.
Man.
So frustrating.
Yeah, ridiculous. I mean, not ridiculous. I mean, whatever. I'm not making any kind of political statements here at all, or any kind of humane statements. I'm just saying it's sad that this is happening, and it's so weird. You don't think about the things that get affected by it. You know, as far as the curfew.
And these are kind of things that are kind of like the release from the stress, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, I'm stressed out that my city's being torn apart, but maybe I can go to a baseball game and take my mind off of it, or I go play poker and take my mind off of it. And now you can't even do that. Now you're just sitting at home with your shotgun protecting your house. I'm not trying to make light of it. It's really scary.
Yeah,
to think about.
Scary and sad.
All right. Well, this isn't scary. This is actually fun. And we should have mentioned this last week, but we had so much else going on. But poker pro Alex Jacobs has infuriated traditionalists with his recent 6-day win streak on the TV game show Jeopardy, where he used game theory tactics to throw his opponents off their games and rack up $151,809 in winnings. He would haphazardly bounce around the game board looking for daily doubles and starting with high-value clues rather than starting and finishing an entire category, which is how traditionalists play Jeopardy. People lost their mind over this, and it was fun to watch this. I actually didn't get to watch any of it. I watched a couple of clips, but I like when people go against the grain.
Yeah, it's a couple of things. One, I interviewed Alex Jacobs, I'm pretty sure it was Foxwoods, not Vegas. And as my friends in Boston would say, he was wicked smart. So I knew that if this guy ever got on this show, he would crush it. He's just really smart. But he's not the first to do this. Just a little while ago, there was that guy who was doing it. It was really ticking off Alex Trebek.
Yes.
Like, really ticking him off because, he likes his little cards in a row, and he likes to be able to just figure out, okay, I know they're going to go down the line, so he can just grab his little hint and say the answer. And when these guys jump all around like that, it makes him blustered a little bit, and he doesn't like that. He's supposed to be the calm, cool, collected guy. So, yeah, this definitely is the way to go, I think. Whenever somebody plays this way effectively, they crush it. I mean, $151,000 on Jeopardy is a huge tally. And
yeah, I think he's in the top 15 of all time, but obviously nowhere near like the more than two million that Ken Jennings had.
But that's still, I mean, think about how much they can win in one day. He had to do it for what, 6 shows, I guess, or something like that. That's crazy. That's a lot of money. Good for him.
And really, the strategy is to build up enough dollars before you get to Final Jeopardy. So
it doesn't matter if you're wrong.
Final Jeopardy doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
And then the one he went out on, He only had players covered by $2, I think. So he actually had to make an answer and guessed wrong, and that's how he got knocked out. But yeah, it's interesting to see how game theory plays into this stuff, and this, I think, proves that poker pros, the skills that you have in poker can be used in other things as well, too.
Yeah, they can translate. All right, we got any updates? Hey, I got to say it again this week.
Because I can't say it right.
Schedule for our Any Up Poker Tour series at Golden Nugget Las Vegas, which runs May 27th to July 3rd, has been announced. Get all the details at anyupmagazine.com/Golden Nugget. But, of course, the highlights include 1,100K guarantee events and a 500K guarantee main event, plus 60 non-hold'em events. And I think my partner forgot about this. I'm not sure. I know he had it on the notes. But June 15th coming up, 10 years been doing this show.
A decade
of decadence. Isn't that Motley Crue? Isn't that like one of your favorite bands?
Yes, we're nowhere near Motley Crue, but I like to think.
So really, you know, the first time we had a major milestone was 100, and we asked for everybody's input, and they actually called the hotline, and we'd put that on our 100 show. That was a three-hour show. That will not happen. But we want to know what you guys think. What should we do for this milestone? Send us your thoughts to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Or you can post them on Facebook and Twitter. Our Facebook and Twitter feeds are starting to grow in popularity. And you can go to Antiup Discussions on PokerRadius.com. Let us know what you think. 10 years, man. That's a long time.
Yeah, we've got to find some way to mark this correctly. And so hopefully our fans will let us know what they want us to do.
All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. It comes from Rob in Indianapolis. He says, I'm going to Vegas in June. I've been to Vegas many times, but it's been several years, and I wasn't into poker as much as I am now. I'm looking to get into some games, but I'm a little overwhelmed with all the options. With one weekend, I wouldn't have nearly enough time to figure out the game that best suits me. Any advice on what poker rooms are good and which ones steer clear of?
Well, I don't know if you heard what Chris just said before the listener spotlight, but Antiup's having a great event at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas, May 27th to July 3rd. Good seats still available. So, Rob from Indianapolis, hope you come down and see us there. And they do have cash games if you're not a tournament player, but come down there and check it out. The serious answer to that question is it's really difficult to give an answer to that. You know, obviously, generally speaking, I think the smaller strip properties are going to be the ones that the tourists gravitate to just because it's convenient. You know, the bigger ones like the Aria and Venetian and Bellagio are where, you know, the local pros come. So you might want to avoid those if you're looking for soft games. But you also get better variety at those rooms as well, too. So, and downtown is a little bit more touristy than locals. And then the ones off the strip and off downtown are more locals, which doesn't mean it's any tougher or weaker. It just means at least you know the type of players, right?
Yeah. I always think of Vegas as three pieces. I think of the strip, I think of downtown, and I think of the locals, just like you said. And then depending on what I want to experience is where I'll go. And also it depends on your mode of transportation, depends on, I mean, you're there for a weekend, but are you renting a car? If you're not renting a car, then sometimes the strip is the way to go because you can get to so many different rooms just by foot. If you want to go downtown and you're staying at the strip, then you know, and, I mean, then you might have to look at some costly ways of getting there. But if you're going to stay downtown, like you said, at Scott at the Golden Nugget, their cash games are sick during that Antiup Poker Tour / Grand Series, and there's quite a few stuff to choose from down there too. So it really just depends on what you're looking for. But I would also suggest picking up our magazine or looking at it online at antiupmagazine.com and seeing our Where to Play. And they'll list, you know, all their special promotions that they'll have for the cash games that you would play in, or if you want to play a lot of little tournaments and things like that. And then if you want to play big tournaments, again, you know, our tour has a lot of big payouts for smaller buy-ins. So that, to me, that's you get everything you want in that one nugget series because the great cash games, the great variety of mixed games in the tournament series, and the great guarantees. So you're going out there when we're running it, you might as well check that out. I don't know of what you should steer clear of. I don't really like to talk like that about the poker rooms because they all have their own merits and they all have their own reasons to be there. So,
right, yeah. I think it's more just what type of player you're looking for. That's the best thing you can come up with. I mean, there's other things. If you talk to players, you'll find out, you know, some rooms will, you know, give you top shelf liquor or something like that just for playing. Little tiny things like that that might push you in one way or the other. But for the most part, I think you're trying to decide on what general type of player that you want to play against.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then go to one of the rooms in that area that attracts that type of player.
Absolutely. All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have AntiUp Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, poker's newest social networking site and home of the AntiUp group discussions. Comes from Pat Culligan. He says, I was just recently at our local casino playing poker with a few friends. We ended up being at different tables, unfortunately for most of the time, but regardless, when we met up halfway through the day to check in with each other, one of my friends told me that some guy called the clock on himself. In the rule book, can a player technically do that? I figured someone here might know. Any info would be appreciated.
We didn't want to waste Sam's time with this one.
Right.
I'm going to say that if you can call the clock, I guess technically you can call it on yourself.
Sure. You're a player in the tournament, and you're calling a clock on a player in the tournament. Absolutely. And I've seen it on TV. They say, come over here and call a clock on me. And at the end, it makes them make their own decision faster. But you could do it. I mean, you're a player, and you're calling it on the player. So just because it's yourself doesn't mean that there's some rule written in it saying you can't do that. So absolutely can call a clock on yourself. I've seen it done live and on TV.
Right. Yeah, I'd be curious how often a tournament director will let you do that. I guess it's no different than continually calling the clock on another player, right? So right. At some point, I think there's going to be a tap on the shoulder and like, come on, you're an adult.
Yeah, but I mean,
give yourself a minute to figure out what you're going to do. You don't need to have me come over here and give you a minute, right?
He would do it, though, because in the interest of the game, you know what I mean? He wants the game to sped up no matter what. I think they would do it. Maybe you're right, though. After a couple, he's going to be like, look, dude, grow up. But again,
going back to what we were talking about on a couple shows ago about, you know, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
My turn to act. Everybody needs to stop and stare at me. I'm calling the clock myself. Everybody go home and tell your friends about it. Maybe I'm making on the Antiup Poker Cast.
Yeah. The cameras in the ceiling are not WPT.
Yep. I would find it kind of annoying. But yeah. I'd also tell Pope, you know, hey, you got a phone, you got watch, you got something. You can call the clock on yourself without going through this theatrics. Because here's the other thing, though, is that it is detracting from the other players in the tournament, right?
Yep.
You know, when the floor is coming over to call the clock on a player that's calling the clock on himself, he's not anywhere else around the tournament, even if there's not a problem. You know, a good floor is roaming the various tables and looking for problems in case something comes up. And now you've tied up his or her time for theatrics.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Hey, we got a brand new O'Malley's move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're in that same 2-5 No Limit Hold'em home game. We've been playing for about an hour since our last hand and currently sit with around 1,100. The table hasn't changed much since then. We haven't gotten any new players, and the mood has remained the same, although a few players have had to rebuy. We're the second largest stack at the table. The blinds post, and we look down, once again, at the King of Hearts, Queen of Hearts in the MP. Again, we make our standard raise to $25. The hijack, button, and big blind all call, and we're going to a flop with about $100 in the pot. It comes down the Queen of Spades, Queen of Diamonds, Ten of Hearts. This is a very good hand, unless we're up against Ace-Queen or Pocket Tens. However, I'm not going to be afraid of any monsters under the bed. The big blind checks, and we make it $60 to go. It's folded back around to the big blind, who makes the call. This is not the same villain as last week. This villain is a maniac, but he does have method to his madness. He'll play any two cards, and he can play them very well. He mixes his game up beautifully, trapping sometimes and walking the dog others. With about 220 in the pot, the turn is a blank, the four of diamonds. I'm still confident we've got the best hand and gain even more confidence once the big blind checks again. We decide to lead out for 125, a little more than half the pot. Our opponent thinks for a short while before making the call. He is starting to confuse me. Maybe that's what he wants. With about 465 in the pot, the river is yet another blank, the three of spades. After a short amount of time, our opponent shoves for his remaining 300. What's he doing? If we call and lose, we'll have about 600 left. Still up a Benjamin for the night. Are we calling?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. And that's spelled out, one hand at a time, no numerals. New sponsor, so looking forward to having them.
Very good.
All right, this one comes from Tom Filipek. And he says, I recently played in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game in the poker room at Foxwoods.
Nice. Remember, Chris? I've been there.
Good odd juice there, right?
Yes. And the waitresses are really excellent. They don't want a tip at all. Kidding. They want a tip. Give them a big tip.
See, you're blowing the water on our 10th anniversary show already.
I know. I'm bringing up too many things.
All right. Tom says, I had bought in for 200, and after a few hours, gradually worked my way back up to about 220 after being down to about 100 at one point.
Oh, okay.
Button was in seat 7, and I was seated in seat 3 at the table. The number 1 seat, who's under the gun plus 1 in his hand, limped, as did number 2 seat. So we have two limpers, and we are under gun plus 3, and we have two black kings.
Probably 15, 16, 20 to go, something like that.
Yep, sounds good. He says the standard pre-flop raise at this table is between 10 and 16, if that helps.
Yeah, so you got two limpers if you're going between 10 and 20, so add those limps into it. 20. 20 sounds good.
Okay, I'm fine with that. He decided to raise to 15. Probably within the range, right?
Yeah, it's in the range. It's just odd when you say 10 to 16, then you have two limpers. You're thinking, okay, 12, 14, okay, I right. guess that's how you make it, but you're pushing it. But yeah, okay, 15, all right, whatever.
And he says the 15 had been his standard preflop raise with two limpers already in the pot.
All right.
So at least he's being consistent with his bets.
So. Yeah, and he's worked his way up from 100 back to 220, so he knows what he's doing a little bit. So
exactly. We'll
give him the credit there.
All right, everyone folded around to the number 1 seat, who is the under gun plus 1, who called, and the other limpers called. So both limpers called, so we are actually in position under the gun plus 3.
Wow.
That's pretty nice.
That's it doesn't happen very often.
With 46 in the pot, flop was jack of clubs, 5 of hearts, tray of hearts.
That's pretty good for us.
And he says, despite my preflop raise, the first player, a man who looked to be in his 40s and only joined the table a few hands earlier without any memorable action, so we have no information on him really, bets 15 of his squiggly $100 stack.
Oh.
He says, as I was thinking about how much to raise when it got to me, the next player, a younger man who had only been playing at our table for a couple of rotations, but had already impressed me as being somewhat tight aggressive, including most recently tabling pocket jacks a few hands earlier after making a large preflop raise, raises to 45 of his squiggly 350 stack.
I'm shoving. There's really no thinking here. I mean, if you're going to be afraid of a set, then why play poker? You right. have a pair of kings. This board is pretty innocuous. And, I mean, well, I don't know how much did the – one guy had like 100 in front of him, but do you know what the other guy had?
Yeah, that guy has squiggly 350, the razor.
Yeah.
So he has his covered.
That's tough. But I don't know if I'm going to shove, but if the guy makes it 45, I can't just call. What are you calling for? Because you're going to – you can't control the size of the pot now. Now the pot's already almost 200, and you only have 200. So if you're going to raise, and that's going to be 135 to 150, you only have 220. You're going to fold in a turn when a 9 comes. So I can't just call. I mean, I just can't call here. Because then you got some guy with hearts there getting it for cheap. When we took the initiative, what did jacks limp? No. Did 5s and 3s limp? Maybe. But jacks didn't limp here, and they certainly didn't limp from that guy. So that one of these guys could have a set. and that's scary. But I can't play poker that way. Am I really going to fold? I'm not going to fold. Am I really going to call? I don't know. Calling seems like the wrong thing, too. I don't know. I raise him, it's too much to... It's more than like 60, 70% of my stacks. I might as well just shove.
Yeah, I'll make a... I'm not saying I would call, but I can make a case for calling here. And that is, that gives us an option to get out of this hand on the next card if we want. Now, I'm not saying that's what we want to do or we should do, but if you shove here, then you're committed to the rest of the hand. Whereas, you know, maybe, you know, an ace comes on the next, you know, maybe somebody's with, you think put somebody on ace jack here, which makes sense, and an ace comes, and now, you know, you've only put 45 in, and you can get away from that hand a lot easier than you can right now.
I don't know.
Gives you an option.
I don't know. Maybe that's a flaw in my game, that I don't look for reasons to get out of a hand in the future. I don't know if that the way people play poker. I don't know. I've never thought about that. I don't really think of, okay, I'm just going to call this so I can fold later. I never think like that ever.
Well, no. I think you're thinking of it wrong. I'm calling this now to give me the option of folding later.
That's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean, though. I mean, I'm calling this now so that I can fold later. I've never thought about poker like that. I always think of, you know, what do I want to do here now? Because later, or what's it going to cost me later? You know what I mean? I can see what you're saying. I'm not confused by what you're saying. I just never think of the hand that way when I'm playing it. I never say, I'm going to do this because it's so little now that I can still get away from it later. Especially when I have another person in the hand who's yet to act behind me.
Well, I guess that's what I'm thinking. Let's play this out. You know, so we raised a 45. We call the 45. Let's say the third player calls as well, too, right?
Uh-huh.
And now an ace comes on the turn. Are you going to be excited that you had shoved before?
No. But,
and of course, I'm not playing this assuming that one card's going to come. But I'm just saying, you know, if I'm going to call this 45 with the intention of probably getting it in unless an ace comes, now I at least give myself the option of getting out if that ace comes. And I'm not so sure what our shove will do here. I mean, obviously, it's a strong play to do. And if either of these guys are just, you know, clowning around, now we take it down. So I'm certainly not suggesting that that's not a bad play. That has a lot of advantages that calling doesn't. But we really don't know where we are right now, right? You know, we have two kings, which makes us feel really good. But, you know, when we were the preflop raiser, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a donk bet and a raise before it gets back to us. I think we got to give somebody credit for something here, right?
Yeah.
And the best case scenario is it's ace jack.
In my mind, yeah, it could be some guy's got a medium pocket pair and thinks we have ace king, so he's betting out into us to think, I know that didn't hit you because you probably have ace king or ace queen, so I'm going to take it down right now. And then the other guy's saying, no, I did hit the jack, and I do have a hand, and I know what you're doing, and this guy has ace king behind me, so I'm raising. And now we're saying, no, we have kings, and what you have is crap, and I'm going to make you pay to hit your flush or your third turn set card kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting that you see the flush, because here's another way of looking at it. It's possible that somebody hears on a flush draw and is just trying to throw us off by the bet and raise, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also probably more likely that nobody has hearts here. So if we make a call and a third heart hits on the turn, which is doesn't help our hand at all, right?
Right.
But now we have an option of pushing somebody off, where right now, maybe if we shove, they wouldn't be scared about making that call.
Do you think there's any way that either of these two players could have played a flush draw that way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think so.
Okay, so like a $15 bet could have been, hey, I got the nut flush draw. I limped with ace six of hearts, and I wanted to call
the
raise.
Set the price and hoping everybody's like,
yeah. So it's possible that the hearts are out there and we can't represent them too then. So
that's possible as well.
You know what I mean? So there's so much up in play here. I mean, I'm not folding. I guess there's a reason to call, like you said, that the guy behind us folds. Now we're heads up in position with kings. And if a scare card comes, we can get away from it. But if on the next card a deuce or a nine or something like that comes, an offsuit nine, and then this guy bets 100, are we folding our kings because this guy's just aggressive?
And I guess that's the thing too, is I can make this call with the intention of getting it all in anyhow.
Yeah.
But giving me that option to do it later.
Yeah.
and knowing that I'm giving up whatever the value of shoving here is, because there is value to do that, right?
Yeah.
So you're giving up that value, but you're retaining the right to get out of this hand or play it stronger on the next street if, you know, like I said, a third heart comes and the guy checks and we feel he's weak and not just, you know, luring us in.
Like, if you had a set and you're the guy in the middle, is there a real need to raise here other than to protect against hearts? I mean, do you really need to raise? Are you one of those guys who are playing like Doyle Brunson and you're hoping that our hero here has king, king, or ace, ace, and that's why you're raising, because you're going to make him think, oh, I'm shoving, and then you trapped him by...
Cool, that's possible.
I mean, those are possible things, so it's very difficult.
It just seems to me like it's more like an ace-jack thing here. I'm not sure why this guy wouldn't have raised with ace-jack pre-flop, but... Yeah, because if you have ace-jack, you really feel vulnerable at this board. If you got a set, then you feel less vulnerable,
Yeah. So it seems like we're ahead, so if we're ahead... I don't see any reason why to let them hit a free card on the turn, that ace for free, or to hit the hearts for free, or to hit their third card for free. I feel like it feels like ace-jack to you, and it feels like some donk bet that isn't a set. I think that I'm going to raise again and protect my own hand and take down this pot now. Or
all excellent points.
You know? All right, so I'm going to shove just because I'm a donk, and I want to see how badly I've messed this hand up.
All right, I might as well, too, but I just want to make that clear that there's a possibility to call here.
Yeah, there is.
All right, let's see what happens here. All right, so our hero says, I stopped to think about the raise. Despite the bet and raise in front of me, I still thought my pocket kings might be good. I thought that at least one of these players might be on a heart draw. I wanted to see where I was and try to induce at least one of the players to fold. I raised 100.
You raised 200 or raised 100?
$200.
Okay, so just 65 more or 55 more. Okay, whatever. I mean, you know, if you bet 100 there and he bet 15 pre, 115, so he's got 105 behind roughly. I guess he bet 50% of his stack.
Well, I mean, I guess here's the thing: is you're going to get the answer you need from that bet versus shoving, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get the same answer. So this way, at least. I mean, again, now with 100 in, it's really tough to fold his hand, right? If
right.
The guy comes to the top.
Right.
But, you know, you still have that option. And if these guys have nothing, they're going to get out for a $100 bet.
Could you fold now? I mean, really?
No, now that I've raised 100.
Yeah, no. There's no way, right? So if the guy shoves now, you're calling.
Right.
Yeah, so you've pretty much, if you're going to do that, then why not just shove anyway? If you can't get away from it, why not shove? You're hoping for a call, or are you hoping to take it down? Because if you're hoping for a call, then why raise? You know what I mean? I just don't think somebody's going to call unless they have a better hand, or they have a hand that's call. You know, it's kind of an odd bet to me to bet 50% of your stack here. Just shove it then.
Well, I wonder, too, if, and again, I'm not pigeonholing this guy on ace-jack, but it does seem very likely to me that raising 100 might get him to make that call, where shoving might get him to fold.
Mm. See, do we want
to fold? We want that call, right?
Do we want the call? I don't know. You know, they're jack or an ace.
Ace-jack, I want that call.
It's a nice pot to take down now, too, though.
It is, too, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know I want ace-jack to call. I mean, I know I want ace-jack to call. It's just... It's hand of the week, you know. So, hey, do I want H deck to call here? You know. All right. I still think that if I'm going to bet 50% of my stack, I mean, you can min raise too. You can make it.
Well, that's pretty much what he did, right?
Well, actually,
well, I guess it's not actually
from 15 to 45 is only a 30.
Yeah, that was only 30.
So you could have made it 75.
That's true. Yeah.
But well, whatever. I feel like a shove is still needed here. I know I'm just a dork, but okay. What happened?
All right, seat number one folds, but the remaining opponent that raised to 45 calls. So we're heads up.
Okay.
Turn is to five of diamonds. So our board now is jack of clubs, five of hearts, tray of hearts, five of diamonds. So a pair on board now.
Okay.
And our opponent asks us how much we have. We showed our remaining stack of 20 red chips and five of white chips next to it and answered 105. And he thought for a second and announced all in.
Yeah, I can't fold. We talked before we can't fold. So,
right. And I mean, actually, I think the fives, in a weird way, help us, right? I mean, if he already had a set, then... I mean, I guess unless he had pocket fives, then... then
right,
then
now quads. We're and he's not going to shove on quads.
Wouldn't think so, right?
And if he had jack-jack, then he would have raised preflop. So really, it's 3-3. And is he really shoving on 3-3? I mean, he's going to bet 100 anyway, so I don't know what the... You know, what the big deal is here,
right,
doing all this semantics. But if, I guess the only hand really we feel like we're trailing is 3-3 because the other hands don't seem plausible. So, yeah, obviously we're not folding for the amount of money that's out there for the pot with king-king. So I'm calling.
All right, cool. Our hero says, again, I had to think. I wasn't sure what to put him on. His post-flop raise of 45 indicated a very strong hand, but why had he not shoved after my $100 3-bet? If he had a set or a two-pair at that point, wouldn't he have wanted to protect his hand against a possible flush draw? Something didn't quite add up. I wasn't thrilled about the situation, but at least if he had a set or two-pair and now improved a boat, I still had two outs, and I was only drawing dead if he had quad fives. But wouldn't have he wanted a value bet instead of shoving if he had quads?
Yep.
After a long think, I finally decided to call.
Don't say anything. So he makes a really good point there, too. Before I forget it, that's why I asked you not to say what was it. He makes a really good point there. When we re-raise before this, why would he not have shoved then?
Right, exactly.
If he already, you know what I mean? Because he knows we're not going to fall. So why did he wait a card and then shove? That's a very interesting point. I want to see what he has now. But that's a real good point. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so the river's the nine of spades. So upon a board, jack of clubs, five of hearts, tray of hearts, five of diamonds, nine of spades. I turned to him and asked, do you have a boat? He said, no, and I announced kings up and tabled my kings. He mucked his cards without showing. Yeah. After about 30 seconds, he mumbled, I had an incredible number of outs. I thought about this for a few seconds and asked, ace of hearts, jack of hearts, since I would have given him the most outs I could think of, every heart except for the king and any ace or jack. He nodded in disgust, and I tend to believe him since his hand would have explained this betting.
Yep, ace, jack of hearts, a perfect surmising there. That's exactly what it had to have been. Wow.
That's right, but even with that hand, you would think you would 4-bet on that.
When we re-raise to 100?
Yeah.
Because you got top pair, top kicker, nut flush draw, and an overcard. So even if the guy has kings or queens, you still have outs even for that.
I guess at that point, now you've got to put us on the hand, right? And since we raised pre-flop, now you got to think maybe aces, kings, queens, which all have us beat at that point, although we're probably still favorite to those hands.
Right.
So by just calling, it gives us, you know, I guess goes back to what I was talking about before. It gives us an out if we want to get out of this hand. And then, you know, a safe card came on there, what we thought was a safe card, he thought, on the turns, and now he shoves.
And now
Now
the original limper pounds the table and says, damn it, I folded pocket nines.
Yep.
But no, that's a real good, putting them on hand range there and then actually getting the right hand. And you were right. You were adamant the whole time that it was ace-jack. And you were right. It was ace-jack. Because it didn't feel like a set. It just didn't. Because of the way he bet and what he did. And then why wouldn't he have just shoved on our re-raise 4-bet it? You know, yep. Well, that's a good hand.
Absolutely, Tom.
All right, Tom. Way to go, and don't forget to enjoy those videos. All right. I'm Chris Costanza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, we got a home game this week. That should be fun. You're not going to be there, but it's going to be Faso and Gambit and Doc and me, and so hopefully something cool next week. We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.